Osho, the New Dawn, Responses to Disciples' Questions, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 16.
Beloved Bhagwan, what is the relation between enlightenment and the spring of life? Is enlightenment the spring of life?
Chandiram, one basic thing has always to be remembered. Not to get involved in questions of intellect. They are pseudo questions. They don't belong to your experience. Mind is tremendously capable of creating questions out of words. But any question that is created by the mind out of words, not out of experience, is an exercise in utter futility. You don't know what enlightenment is as an experience. You don't know what the spring of life is as an experience. The question is purely intellectual. It can lead to a great philosophical discussion, but it will not lead to any understanding or any transformation. Intellect is one of the barriers to reach to the sources of existence. It does not allow you to ask the authentic question. It goes on giving you questions which only appear as questions, but they are not your quest. Of course, in a dictionary, enlightenment will mean something else. A spring of life will mean something else. But we are not discussing here linguistics. And the people who have been writing dictionaries, analyzing language and grammar, are not the people of the past. So the first thing always remember, whether the question is arising from some experiential source or not. If it is not arising from experience, then it is not worth discussing. Carol, a newly wed, brags that her Romeo is a model husband. He looked up the word model in the dictionary and found it means a small imitation of the real thing. It has been heard that the Pope died, but was allowed to return to earth to speak to the cardinals. They gathered around him eagerly. "What is he like?" they clamored. "Is he very old, with a long white beard, like in all the paintings? Tell us, describe him." "Well," said the Pope, "to start with, he is blessed." Knowing is one thing, knowing directly and knowing through books are so different that sometimes they may appear similar, but they are not similar. I cannot answer it in terms of intellect, but I can answer it in terms of existential experience. The spring of life and enlightenment are not the same, although they are deeply related. The spring of life then becomes aware of itself, it brings you to the experience of enlightenment. In other words, a spring of life plus awareness is equal to enlightenment. A spring of life is available to everybody, otherwise how you can live? your life is continuously being nourished by the spring of life. The trees are nourished by the spring of life. The flowers blossom, but the juice comes from the spring of life. The whole existence is nothing but manifestation of the springs of life. But trees cannot become enlightened. Neither mountains nor oceans. Neither animals nor birds. They all have the same source of life as you have. But man has a prerogative, a privilege, that he can become aware of his spring of life. This awareness is not possible in any other form in the existence. It is man's grandeur. It is his dignity. Existence has given him the most precious opportunity. If he can create awareness, consciousness, more alertness, then his spring of life explodes into a new dimension, the dimension of life becomes the dimension of light. Of knowing. Knowing the deepest roots of our being in eternity. And the moment we know our roots are eternal, we also know our flowers are also going to be eternal. Enlightenment is a flowering. The springs of life are seeds. Enlightenment is a flower. The seed has come to its ultimate expression. There is no more to go. Its springs of life are the lowest rung of the ladder. And enlightenment is the highest rung of the ladder. Although the ladder is the same, the change comes slowly as you become more aware of who you are, of what is life, not intellectually, not by reading through scripture, but by reading the only holy scripture, that is your own being, and bringing your potential to its realization. So that which was hidden in the seed becomes an explosion in the flower. the fragrance. That fragrance is enlightenment. It comes from the sources of life. But it is not synonymous with it. The seed is not synonymous with the flower. Although the flower comes from the seed, the seed is the womb. But the flowers, although connected with the seed, with the womb, is a totally new experience. Awareness ordinarily is objective. You know others. You know the world. You know the far away stars. The moment awareness turns inward and it starts knowing itself, in other words, the moment awareness is the object of its own knowing, enlightenment blossoms with all its beauty, with all its immortal glory. Life is accepted by the scientist, but he is not yet capable of accepting the possibility of enlightenment. Life is accepted by the atheist, but he is also not capable of comprehending the ultimate explosion. Just as for millennia we had no idea that the matter is made of small atoms which are not visible to the eyes. They are so small that if you put one atom upon another atom and then go on putting, you will need 1 lakh atoms and then they will be as thick as a human hair. Such a small atom, 1 lakh times thinner than the human hair, when it explodes, releases so much energy that a city like Hiroshima or Nagasaki disappears within seconds, evaporates. I have seen a picture sent by a friend from Japan. just looking at the picture, one feels so sad about the humanity, so hopeless, the picture is of a small girl, maybe 9 years old. She is going from the ground floor to the first story with her bag and books, perhaps to do the homework before she goes to sleep. She is just on the staircase in the middle. When on Hiroshima the atom bomb falls, she is burnt then and there, and her whole body with the books and the bag all burnt. Have become attached to the wall of the staircase. She is just now a shadow. Everything is burned, but you can see the figure of the girl, you can see the figure of her bag. It did not take even a single minute for people to see what is happening. And there were at least 100 1,000 people in Hiroshima, and the same or a little more was the number in Nagasaki. Just a small atom exploding creates so much energy, you can use it for destruction, you can use it for some creative purpose. And right now the scientists say we have come so far from Hiroshima and Nagasaki that our new nuclear weapons are so great in their energy that the atom bombs dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima look like children's toys. If matter in its smallest particle contains so much energy, can you conceive how much energy may be available in the living cell of human beings? Enlightenment is the explosion of a living cell . Certainly it is not destructive at all, but it transforms the whole man. In that way it is destructive. It destroys the old man, It describes the night. It describes all that was constituting your personality, your jealousy, your anger, your hate, your lust, your greed, all that is simply finished in a single moment. And the same energy that was involved in jealousy and hate and greed and ambition and thousand and one desires is changed in a totally new forms of energy, love, silence, peace, compassion, wisdom, all that is the basic search of life itself. Life in itself is dormant, is fast asleep. Enlightenment is absolutely awake. But it is the same energy that was asleep that becomes awake. So they are not synonymous, but they are two extremes of the same energy. But this is taken as an intellectual understanding is not going to help you in any way. It has to become your own experience. You have to see that light. You have to see that explosion within your own being. You have to see the darkness disappearing and the new dawn of a new life. A life of grace and gratitude. A life of beauty and blessing. But Chandram, you have to remember, it is very easy to ask questions as a mind gymnastics. I'm not interested in mind gymnastics. Because it leads you nowhere. You remain stuck where you are. Only you become more burdened with knowledge. Knowledge which is meaningless because it is not part of your own experience. Rabbi Dear Esteem was asking his congregation to donate money to help build a new synagogue. Suddenly the town prostitute stood and shouted, "Praise the Lord, I repent. I will give $2,000 right now." "Well, as much as we need funds, I'm afraid I can't accept tainted money," said Dear Esteem. "Take it, Rabbi," shouted a man from the back. "After all, it is our money anyway." Now, what these guys are doing in a synagogue? Just a formality. They are visiting prostitutes. The prostitute is more authentic. Perhaps the money also belongs to the rabbi. That's why the man is saying it is our money anyway. Mind has been befooling men for centuries. After holding mass in Warsaw Cathedral, the Pope was giving words of encouragement to a group of devout Poles. One of them asked, "Your Holiness, Poles are such devout Catholics. Why was not Christ born in Poland?" "Don't you understand," said the Pope, "that for such a birth there had to be 3 wise men and a virgin?" "And where can you find 3 wise men in Poland and a virgin?" You must know the story of Jesus, that he is born out of a virgin, and 3 wise men come from the east to pay him respect. They are the first to recognize in the small child the possibility of a future enlightened being. They recognize in the seed the flower. "I recognize in you the seed and the potential of a flower. But if you go on thinking intellectually, you will become a philosopher, a theologian, but you will never become a mystic. And unless you become a mystic, you have wasted your life." Such a great opportunity. Where you can grow up to your greatest height of consciousness is being wasted in unconscious trivia. And even if you think about something great, it is only a thought. It never becomes an actual reality in your being. I would like you to be more existential. I am not an existentialist, because that is again falling into the same trap. The existentialist philosophers are not enlightened people. Neither Jean-Paul Sartre, nor Jasper, nor Martin Heidegger, nor Marshall, nor Soren Kierkegaard. They are philosophers of existence. They think about existence. I want you not to be existentialist thinkers. I want you to be existential experiencers. And that difference is so great and makes all the difference. Because Jean-Paul Sartre or Jasper or other existentialist philosophers live in anguish, in anxiety, in boredom, in despair. Even think that perhaps suicide is the only way out of this mess. These people are not to be categorized with Gautam Buddha or Chuang Tzu. Or Baal Sen. These people are again thinking about existence just as old philosophers were thinking about God. Only the object of thinking has changed, but thinking continues. And thinking can only lead you into a desert. Only it is the experience which leads your life river towards the ultimate merger with the ocean, with the universe, with the life with full awareness. You come back home. You had left the home unconscious. You come back home with consciousness. The circle is complete. Your life has come to fulfillment and contentment. This is the only benediction And this is the only authentic religious path.
Beloved Bhagwan, if I look at my death or at your death, one thing I could never forgive myself is to miss you. I used to think, if life has a purpose, you are the purpose, and if there is a destiny, you are my destiny. Now I see things a little differently. The most beautiful gift my life can give to you is not to worship you or help your work on this earth. It is not even to love you. Out of your compassion, as I understand it, the most beautiful gift my life can give to you is my own enlightenment. Please, Bhagwan, give me a technique to prepare my meditation.
The way your understanding has been growing, it's perfectly the right way and the right direction. The only thing you should think of is enlightenment. Yes, that is the only gift you can give to me, your enlightenment. Everything else is trivial. So your conclusion has my absolute categorical approval. And once you are committed, once you have decided wholeheartedly that enlightenment is the only purpose of being here in the world, of being alive, then a single pointed awareness, just like an arrow moving towards its target, begins in you. You are asking for the right meditation. Meditation is a beautiful word. Hiding behind it a very dangerous reality. The dangerous reality is, if you want to be deeply in meditation, you will have to pass almost through a death, the death of the old, the death of all that you used to be. A discontinuity with the past and the rebirth. The place where your meditation is going to descend is the place occupied by your mind and your heart. So the first primary work is to clean your interior being of all thoughts, there is no question of choosing that keep the good thoughts in and throw the bad thoughts out. For a meditator, all thoughts are simply junk. There is no question of good and bad. They all occupy the space inside you. And because of their occupation, your inner being cannot become absolutely silent. So good thoughts are as bad thoughts. Don't make any discrimination. Throw the baby with the bath water. Meditation needs an absolute quiet. A silence so deep that nothing exists within you. Once you understand what exactly meditation means, it is not difficult to attain it. It is our birthright. We are absolutely capable of having it, but you cannot have both the mind and meditation. Mind is a disturbance. Mind is nothing but a normal madness. You have to go beyond the mind into a space where no thought has ever entered. Where no imagination functions. Where no dream arises. Where you simply are. Just a nobody. It is more a understanding than a discipline. It is not that you have to do much. On the contrary, you don't have to do anything except clearly understand what meditation is. That very understanding will stop the functioning of the mind. Because that understanding is almost like a master before whom the servants stop quarreling with each other or even talking with each other. And suddenly the master enters in the house and there is silence. All servants start being busy. At least look that they are busy. Just before a moment they were all quarreling and fighting and discussing. And nobody was doing anything. Understanding what meditation is inviting the master in. Mind is a servant. The moment the master comes in, with all its silence, with all its joy, suddenly the mind falls into absolute silence. Once you have achieved a meditative state, enlightenment is only a question of time. You cannot force it. You have to be just waiting. An intense waiting with a great longing, almost like thirst, hunger, not a word. It is the experience of people who have lost sometimes in a desert. First thirst is a word in their mind, that I am feeling thirsty and looking for water. But as time goes on and there is no sign of any oasis, and as far as eyes can see, no possibility of finding water, and the thirst goes on spreading all over the body, from the mind, from just a word thirst, it starts spreading to the every cell and fiber of the body. Now it is no more a word, it is an actual experience. Your every cell, and there are 7 million cells in the body, is thirsty. They don't know words, they don't know language. But they know that they need water, otherwise life is going to be finished. In meditation, the longing becomes just a thirst. For enlightenment and the patient awaiting, because it is such a great phenomenon and you are so tiny, your hands cannot reach to it, it is not within your reach. It will come and overwhelm you, but you cannot do anything to bring it down. You are too small, your energies are too small, but whenever you are really awaiting with patience and longing and passion, it comes. In the right moment, in the right moment, it comes. It has always come. You are asking what meditation will be helpful to you. Raso, all meditations, hundreds of techniques are available, but the essence of all those techniques is the same, just their forms differ, and the essence is contained in the meditation vipassana. That is the meditation which has made more people enlightened in the world than any other, because it is the very essence. All other meditations have the same essence, but in different forms. Something non-essential is also joined with them, but vipassana is pure essence. You cannot drop anything out of it, and you cannot add anything to improve it. And vipassana is such a simple thing that even a small child can do it. In fact, the smallest child can do it better than you, because he is not yet filled with garbage of the mind. He is still clean and innocent. Raso, I would suggest vipassana as the technique for you. Vipassana can be done in three ways. You can choose which one suits you the best. The first is awareness of your actions, your body, your mind, your heart. Walking, you should walk with awareness. Moving your hand, you should move with awareness, knowing perfectly that you are moving the hand. You can move it without any consciousness, like a mechanical thing. You are on a morning walk, you can go on walking without being aware of your feet. Be alert. Of the movements of your body. While eating, be alert of the movements that are needed for eating. Taking a shower, be alert of the coolness that is coming to you. The water falling on you, and the tremendous joy of it. Just be alive. It should not go on happening in an unconscious state. And the same about your mind. Whatever thought passes on the screen of your mind, just be a watcher. Whatever emotion passes on the screen of your heart, just remain a witness. Don't get involved. Don't get identified. Don't evaluate what is good, what is bad. That is not part of your meditation. Your meditation has to be choiceless awareness. And you will be able one day even to see very subtle moods. How sadness settles in you, just like night is slowly, slowly settling around in the world. How suddenly a small thing makes you joyous. Just be a witness. Don't think I am sad. Just know there is sadness around me. There is joy around me, that I am confronting a certain emotion or a certain mood. But you are always far away, a watcher on the hills, and everything else is going in the valley. This is one of the ways vipassana can be done. And for a woman, my feeling is, it is the easiest. because the woman is more alert of her body than men. It is just by nature. She is more conscious how she looks. She is more conscious how she moves. She is more conscious how she sits. She is always conscious of being graceful. And it is not only a conditioning, it is something natural and biological. Mothers who are experienced at least of 2-3 children start feeling after a certain time whether they are carrying in their womb a boy or a girl. Because the boy starts playing football. He starts kicking here and there. He starts making himself fed. He announces that he is here. The girl remains silent and relaxed. She does not play football, she does not kick, she does not announce. She remains as quiet as possible, as relaxed as possible. So it is not a question of conditioning, because in the womb even, you can see the difference between the boy and the girl. The boy is hectic. He cannot sit in one place. He is all over the place. He wants to do everything. He wants to know everything. The girl behaves in a totally different way. That's why I say, Raso, it will be easier for you to take Vipassana in this first form. The second form is breathing, becoming aware of breathing. As the breath goes in, and your belly starts rising up, and as the breath goes out, your belly starts settling down again. So the second method is to be aware of the belly, its rising and falling. Just the very awareness of the belly rising and falling. And the belly is very close to the life forces, because the child is joined with mother's life through the navel. Behind the navel is his life source. So when the belly rises up, it is really the life energy, the spring of life that is rising up and falling down with each breath. That too is not difficult and perhaps maybe more easier, because it is a single technique. In the first, you have to be aware of the body, you have to be aware of the mind, you have to be aware of your emotions, moods. So it has three steps. The second star has a single step. Just the belly moving up and down. And the result is the same. As you become more aware of the belly, the mind becomes silent. The heart becomes silent. The moods disappear. And the third is to be aware of the breath. At the entrance when the breath goes in through your nostrils, feel it at that extreme, the other polarity from the belly. Feel it from the nose. The breath going in gives a certain fullness to your nostrils. Then the breath going out, breath going in, breath going out. That too is possible. It is easier for men than for a woman. The woman is more aware of the belly. Most of the men don't even breathe that deep as the belly. Their chest rises up and falls down because the wrong kind of athletics prevails over the world. Certainly it gives a more beautiful form to the body if your chest is high and your belly is almost non-existent. Man has chosen to breathe only up to the chest, so the chest becomes bigger and bigger and the belly shrinks down. That appears to him to be more athletic. And all the gymnastics the only exception is Japan. Around the world, except Japan, all athletics and the teachers of athletics emphasize to breathe, fill your lungs and expand your chest and pull the belly in. The ideal is the lion whose chest is big and whose belly is very small. So be like a lion that has become the rule of athletics, gymnastics, and the people who have been working on the body. Japan is the only exception where they don't care that the chest should be broad and the belly should be pulled in. It needs a certain discipline to pull the belly in. It is not natural. Japan has chosen the natural way. Hence you will be surprised to look at a Japanese statue of Buddha. And that is the way you can immediately discriminate whether the statue is Indian or Japanese. The Indian Gautam Buddha has a very athletic body. The belly is very small and the chest is very broad. But the Japanese Buddha is totally different. His chest is almost silent because he breathes from the belly, but his belly is bigger. It does not look very good because the idea prevalent in the world is, and it is so old, but it is natural, more relaxed. In the night it happens, when you sleep, you don't breathe through the chest, you breathe through the belly. That's why the night is such a relaxed experience. After your sleep, in the morning you feel so fresh, so young. Because the whole night you were breathing naturally. You were in Japan. These are the two points. If you are afraid that you are breathing from belly, and being attentive to its rising and falling will destroy your athletic form. Men may be more interested in that athletic form. Then for them it is easier to check near the nostrils, where the breath enters, watch and when the breath goes out, what? These are three forms anyone will do. And if you want to do two forms together, you can do two forms together. Then the effort will become more intense. If you want to do all the three forms together, you can do all the three forms together. Then the possibilities will be quicker. But it all depends on you. Whatever feels easy, remember, easy is right. And as meditation will become settled, mind silent, ego will disappear. You will be there, where there will be no feeling of I. Then the doors are open. Just wait with a loving longing, with a welcome in the heart for that great moment, the greatest moment in anybody's life of enlightenment. It comes. It certainly comes. It has never delayed for a single moment. Once you are right in the tuning, it suddenly explodes in you, transforms you. The old man is dead, and the new man has arrived. Big Chief Sitting Bull had been constipated for many moons. So he sent his favorite squaw to the medicine man for help. The medicine man gave the squaw three pills and told her to give them to the chief and then report back to him the next morning. The next morning, the squaw came back with the message, "Big Chief, no shit." So the medicine man told her to double the dose. The next day, she came back with the message, "Big Chief, no shit." So again, he told her to double the dose. Again she came back with the same message. This went on for a week. And finally the medicine man told the squaw to give Sitting Bull the whole box. The next morning she came back with a very sad expression. "What is wrong, my child?" asked the medicine man. The little squaw looked at him with tears in her eyes and said, "Big shit, no cheese." One day it will happen. And that will be a great moment. That's what I am calling the right moment. Okay.